Hello, and welcome to another episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. And my name is Diana Isaacs. I am with my co-host, Natalie Bellini. And we are so excited today because what we want to talk about is Ozempic, semaglutide, and its recent hot-off-the-press FDA approval for people with type 2 diabetes and kidney disease. And this is the first time that we've had a GLP-1 agonist gain the FDA approval for this indication. So, Natalie, I'm going to turn it over to you to talk a little bit more about how this came to be.
Thank you so much, Diana. Welcome, everyone. So last year, we actually talked about the FLOW trial, the phase three FLOW trial, which had approximately 3,500 people that stopped early, a year earlier than expected. And why do trials stop early? I think this is always something we have to think about, right? When you have a medication, which was semaglutide 1 milligram weekly, and these other people who didn't get the medication, and you start seeing the people getting the medication and their treatment is so much more beneficial, you actually ethically can't continue the trial. And that's why it was stopped, right? If we think back, other trials like that, the DCCT, those people that were given multiple daily injections of insulin or an insulin pump had improvement in neuropathy, retinopathy, neuropathy, so much more so than the people that were on traditional injections of twice a day. We stopped that trial early too. So there are dozens of trials over time that we've stopped early, but this is one of them because of the dramatic changes in outcomes using semaglutide 1.0 in people with diabetes and CKD. So what does that look like? It has now been FDA approved Ozempic, which is semaglutide 1 milligram, to reduce the risk of kidney disease worsening. So they've already gotten it, and we're going to slow down that worsening, kidney failure, which is end-stage kidney disease, and death due to cardiovascular disease in adults with type 2 and CKD. It's based on this trial that we talked about where semaglutide, ready for this, 24% reduction in primary major kidney disease events, right? That and all by itself is like, wow, that's enough. But it also slowed down the decrease in mean GFR slope. So when we look at kidney disease, what happens is you slowly see this estimated glomerular filtration rate slowly go down until we end up needing dialysis. And so that slope was slowed. That's amazing because these people can continue to function. So impressive, 18% reduction in cardiovascular events, and then 20% reduction in all-cause death compared to the placebo. So this we talked about this back in May of 2024, and then it was presented at ADA in 2024. But we weren't surprised at the news, but we're also so excited, right? I mean, this is again, how can we use these medications to reduce the risk of complications and actually improve day-to-day life for these people with diabetes?
Yeah, it's truly awesome. And I think the ADA standards of care were already ahead of this because the 2025 guideline already put SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 agonists more in parallel, where in the past, it used to be SGLT2 inhibitors first priority and then GLP-1 receptor agonists. So it's great to see that the indication has also come to fruition because that always makes cost coverage a little bit easier as well. And it'll be kind of interesting how it also plays out on formularies and stuff too. I know that there are certain insurance formularies that do require using an SGLT2 inhibitor first before having access to a GLP-1 agonist. And so it's always interesting how these indications may shake things up. I think ultimately, though, who wins are people with diabetes because now we've got two therapies that we use for diabetes that also have proven to benefit kidney function as well. And then, of course, we also have the drug finerenone or Kerendia, which also helps with kidneys. So it's really exciting because I think this has just kind of been an ignored area until the last few years where we just kind of said, okay, kidney disease is one of the complications of diabetes, and you might just end up with kidney disease. And now we can be so much more proactive and we can use these medications and we hopefully can prevent this potential kidney damage that could happen.
I absolutely agree. And I think part of the thing is that there are every medication even, you know, over-the-counter ibuprofen has side effects, right? So I think we have to remember that some of these medications have side effects that people just can't tolerate them. So before it was like, okay, you have kidney disease, we have to go to SGLT2. Okay, you ended up with either, mycotic infections, UTI, whatever it was that you couldn't tolerate it. You got dehydrated. You know, there are some challenges with a handful of people. Most people tolerate them, people should not be listening thinking, wow, we use it all the time. We use them all the time every day, right? But there are that handful. Well, now we can say, well, there's another class of medications. There is this semaglutide 1.0 that has been FDA approved, and we can try that instead. And again, you and I love those combinations, right? A little bit of semaglutide, right? That 1.0, a little bit of an SGLT2, the lower dose. I'm a big fan of the lower doses of SGLT2s. And if needed, finerenone. What a combination. And what can we do? Can I slow that slope down so this person never ends up needing dialysis? They never end up having those other challenges that come with stage 4 and approaching stage 5 kidney disease. Because it's not just one thing. It's not just, wow, you need dialysis. It's exhaustion. It's all these other problems that come from that we end up having to treat.
So the other thing I think is going to be really interesting is now if someone has type 2 diabetes and CKD, are they then going to get Ozempic over other GLP-1 therapies? Or are formularies going to guide to one over another? Because as of right now, Ozempic or semaglutide is the one that has the data, has the actual randomized controlled trial, the flow data, and has the indication versus others in the class have shown they've shown trends towards benefits, but don't have randomized controlled trials backing up that data. So it'll be kind of interesting. On the positive side, I think that we're going to hopefully see that maybe more people have access. I know with some of the state Medicaid programs, it's really, you have to try some of the older GLP-1 therapies before you can get like semaglutide or tirzepatide. And so hopefully that helps. If someone has CKD, we can go straight to semaglutide. So it'll kind of be interesting to see how that shakes out too. And of course, we don't know. We can't say without a doubt that it's a class effect or it's not, because we ultimately need to have that data to know for sure.
Absolutely. We can't jump to conclusions. For example, we know that some of the older GLP-1s didn't show cardiovascular risk reduction event, right?
Right.
So we can't, I think that's the hardest part. And we talk about this when we talk about ADA guidelines, right? The ADA does not move until there is data in the sand in at least one, if not more, randomized controlled trials with lots of people to be able to say, let's make a decision. It's that same thing. You can't say that all GLP-1s are going to do this, or even GLP-1 GIP, until we have the data. And it's going to take a while. This will be the first for a little bit before we have others that follow. This was an impressive trial through Novo. This is it's expensive, 3,533 people. You have to recruit them. You have to find the centers willing to do it. You've got to follow them. So this is a lot of work. And Novo did it. And I applaud them for this, because sometimes when you start things, you don't know what the outcomes are going to be, right? There's lots and lots of trials that never come to fruition that don't show positive outcomes. And this did. And we're excited to use it and add it to our armamentarium of treatment for these people. And we, of course, love the A1C drop and all the other things that it does, right? It's still, without CKD, it has an excellent drop in A1C. It has an excellent cardiovascular risk reduction, all of those other things. So this just gives us, to me, it gives me more confidence than anything else.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then speaking of cardiovascular risk reduction, I don't think everyone realizes that having CKD is a huge cardiovascular risk factor. That is one of the biggest reasons why we want to treat CKD and we want to prevent CKD. So yeah, of course, we worry about the CKD outcomes, right? Like, I don't think anyone wants to go on dialysis. Nobody wants to end up needing a kidney transplant. But it's actually much more than that. Even if those things never happen, just having that puts you at that additional cardiovascular risk. And that's why these therapies are so important, because it's more than just the kidney. It's also about the cardiovascular risk, the whole thing. So I think this is a big deal. One other thing also I just kind of reflecting on is I wonder if we would see this benefit if the drug is used for obesity in people without type 2 diabetes. And of course, the FLOW trial was done in people with type 2 diabetes, so we don't have that data. But how neat would that be if we could also show this in people with obesity, because then it just would kind of make it more accessible also for that population as well. So I wonder if we'll see that in the future, some of these trials of CKD in people with obesity.
Well, and that's exactly where the cardiovascular risk reduction with people that have obesity as part of their diagnoses, right? That came out not that far long ago, right? So we know that semaglutide reduced cardiovascular risk by more than 20% in people without diabetes with a diagnosis of obese, right? So that makes your brain start thinking about, okay, what about CKD? What about some of these other things? So I think it's exciting times. I mean, I really do. This is, you know, in the end, these medications, this semaglutide 1.0 and CKD, this made my week when I got the email.
Definitely. And there was actually a trial that was presented at Kidney Week 2024. It was a 6-month trial that compared semaglutide, the higher dose, the 2.4 milligrams against placebo in patients that had obesity and CKD. So they did not have diabetes. And the results suggested that the semaglutide was associated with a placebo-corrected 52.1% reduction in the UACR. So I think we're seeing these trends. We're seeing some of the data start to accumulate. So I hope eventually we could also get an indication for obesity, because I know right now it's so sad. Like, people with obesity are often, it's not enough. They're not able to get these drugs just with having the indication of obesity. So here we have people lining up, like trying to see what they could do to get a type 2 diabetes diagnosis or maybe a sleep apnea diagnosis. And so it'd be another way to be able to have access to the medication.
Absolutely. I think it's coming. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time to actually get the trials done and get the people in and do the analysis. But I believe in the next handful of years, we will see that.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation.
Yes.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. That wraps up this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real World Perspectives.